presentation you gave your client. Thank you. The next case is Lott, or U.S. v. Lott. Ms. Day?
Counsel, Your Honors, may it please the Court. The question in this case is simple. There is one question raised here, and that is whether the district court erred by failing to adequately address and consider the effect of Mr. Lott's absence on his immediate family members. Family circumstances are certainly an issue that existed pre-Booker. The guidelines addressed those, and this court recognized long ago that they were an adequate or acceptable reason for a downward departure in appropriate cases. Mr. Lott presented evidence that would make this an appropriate case. He presented evidence by way of numerous letters from friends and family members. In particular, there were a dozen letters that were presented. In particular, letters from his wife, his stepson, his stepson's teacher, which are probably the three most relevant, but also letters from his mother-in-law, another stepson, a stepdaughter, and a granddaughter. All of those address the unique family circumstances and the impact that Mr. Lott's absence would have on his family were he to be incarcerated. And let me point out that he had actually been incarcerated for about, I believe it was 10 months at the time. I'm sorry. He was had been on the street for 10 months. He had been then arrested in May of 2011 and had been in custody for several months at the time of the sentencing in this case. So the letters also addressed the distinct hardships that had occurred during that time period. Among the hardships, well, first of all, among the things that Mr. Lott did for his family, he was particularly responsible for the care of his young stepson, who was in the fourth grade. His wife worked a split shift, and so she wasn't at home when the son needed to go to school or be picked up from school. So Mr. Lott was responsible for that. He also took on the added responsibility of assisting with his granddaughter in that manner as well.
Counsel, these are very difficult things, but how does this differ from any other criminal defendant that sentences and does time that leaves a family behind?
Your Honor, the difference here, and there's no question, anytime a defendant is sentenced and leaves a family behind, there is an impact. But this Court has required that where that issue is raised, that the Court consider whether or not the impact in a particular case is such that it would justify a departure. And the difference here is, first of all, that there were factors pointed to that were addressed and evidence presented regarding those factors, and the Court didn't adequately consider those. In fact, the Court never referenced those factors. Of the dozen letters that were presented, the judge specifically referenced one line from one letter, and it didn't have anything to do with the family circumstances. The judge specifically mentioned nature and circumstances of the offense, criminal history, and characteristics shown by that history and or a question of change in character. He never addressed the issue of family circumstances, and that's what makes this a different situation. Yes,
didn't he discuss the letter from the teacher?
He did not specifically address the letter from the teacher. He addressed a reference that the stepson, Kelvin, made to Mr. Lott having a nickname for him and calling him Conehead. That had also been addressed by me during the course of my argument. The teacher's letter, which showed that there was a negative impact on Kelvin resulting from the removal of his father from the stepfather from the home, was not addressed. And that was perhaps the most telling letter in terms of looking at the impact. It was a third party, somebody who didn't have a familial interest. The judge did address the fact that letters from family members and friends often reflect a different character than what's demonstrated by the conduct. But we had an independent letter here from somebody who didn't have to address those familial relationships. and specifically noted all that Mr. Lott was doing in his stepson's life and the impact, the negative impact that that removal from his life had had on him.
Should we treat as a procedural error the failure to address each of those third-party letters?
Your Honor, I don't think it is a failure, a procedural error to address each and every one of those letters specifically, but I think it is a procedural error to not look at that category of letters that raises this issue when it has been an argument, first of all, addressed on three pages of the nine-page sentencing memoranda and was addressed in court at that hearing by sentencing counsel.
Well, the judge talked about this at some length. Let me just raise one issue kind of for future cases here. This is the kind of case where it would be very, very helpful to have the entire statement by the district judge attached. The J&C really is very little help in the appendix. It's irrelevant. What's relevant is the transcript of the judge's explanation of the sentence.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. I thought that myself last night as I was reviewing and preparing. I agree that should have been attached to this. It would have made it much easier.
Your office and your colleagues around the circuit bring a number of sentencing appeals. I just offer that as a suggestion.
And we'll definitely make note of that for future reference. I agree. It helps in the review of this. The judge did reference in that transcript, as I said, those four factors were specifically listed at pages 26. The closest that I felt the judge got to addressing the family circumstances issue was on pages 23 of the sentencing transcript, or page 23 of the sentencing transcript, where he said, it's like you have this family and you have these people that you care for. How can you possibly do this? And another statement, that people depend on you, Mr. Lott, but yet you've engaged in extraordinarily risky behavior. But in the context of those statements, he wasn't specifically addressing the family circumstances. So it's an issue that was brought before the court and yet didn't get the consideration that was due and necessary for this to have been a reasonable sentence. That is similar, I think, in facts to the Cunningham case where there was a low-end sentence imposed in that case, and this court said that where the sentencing court passed over a principal merited argument that the case had to be remanded for determination of whether or not that specific issue would impact the sentence. And, Your Honor, that's what we're asking for here, is the case to be remanded for the judge to address this specific reasoned argument and give adequate consideration of that. In that is the only way we believe a reasonable sentence can be imposed.
Thank you, Ms. Dick. Ms. Morrissey?
You look very familiar.
Yeah, I'm here all morning. Your Honor, again, we respectfully request that this honorable court affirm the sentence imposed on Mr. Lott by the district court in this case. Initially, Your Honor, I'd like to address a question posed by this court as to whether the district court addressed how many letters the district court addressed. At page 21 through 22 of the sentencing transcript, Judge Herndon stated specifically, and I quote, there are a lot of things to think about here in terms of mitigating circumstances. There's no question that the letters, plural, that I got, particularly the letter from the teacher, give me pause in terms of what I should do in this case. So the court specifically mentioned the letter from the teacher. He goes on to say, the letter from Kelvin, the stepson, certainly give a sentencing judge pause in consideration of what I should do. So we also specifically considered the letter of Kelvin. Those were the two primary letters raising the argument of defense counsel that Mr. Lott should be sentenced to home confinement so that he could continue to transport his stepson to school and assist in cooking for the son.
And be a splendid role model.
Right. Your Honor, again, similarly to the last case, This is a situation where the district court clearly did not procedurally err. He calculated the guideline range to which there were no objections, so he was working from a properly calculated range. He subjected that to the adversarial process of the parties. He systematically considered and went through each of the factors listed in Section 3553, and at the end of the day, he concluded that the guideline sentence was reasonable and appropriate in this case, and he said specifically that he just weighed the factors differently than the defendant urged. So it is, while the judge never specifically said or the term family circumstances, Judge Herndon clearly, if you read the sentencing transcript as a whole, was concerned about
that. We raised the same point with you. Yes, we do need to read the sentencing transcript as a whole. We can find it in the electronic docket here.
Yes, Your Honor.
But why not simply attach it to a brief?
That I agree, Your Honor. I would point out it is verbatim in large part in the government's factual summary.
I know that. It's large part, but you just said read it in its entirety, which is great advice. So
thank you, Your Honor. If the court
I note
has
that
no-
for your entire office.
So. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Judge, in this case, too, I just want to point out the defendant relies heavily on the Cunningham case. The government relies heavily on the Poets case. I would urge, Your Honor, that this case, in my opinion, the government's position, is much more closely to the situation in Poets. In Cunningham, the judge was very concerned and said that it could not be confident that the judge had considered the Section 3553 factors because there was just a quick summary, I've considered the factors. Here, there's no question that Judge Herndon considered each of the factors. He went through them systematically. Cunningham was also very concerned that, it talked a lot about Rule 32 and whether a controverted matter had been ruled upon. In this case, the judge, there were no controverted matters the judge didn't rule on. He just simply heard different arguments from the parties about what an appropriate decision was, appropriate sentence was, and then made his decision on what an appropriate decision was. That's much more like the situation in Poets that the government relies on. So I really have nothing further to add. We would stand on our brief, Your Honors, unless the court has any questions.
Thank you.
Ms. Day?
How much time? You have 2 minutes, Ms. Day.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be brief. I do want to apologize. Ms. Morrissey is correct. The judge did make a passing reference to the letters saying that, to two of the letters saying there's no question that the letters that I got, particularly the letter from the teacher, give me pause. However, that's not sufficient. That's not anything akin to the Poets case, where the court was very careful to point out that the case had gone on for a year. There had been multiple hearings and a great deal of in-depth evaluation.
It shows that the judge considered the letter. I mean, what more do you want?
Not for this purpose. He specifically addresses other things there dealing with his change in character. That's not the same thing as the family circumstances. We don't know what he addressed there, and there's not enough detail in this record to be able to determine that. So I think that is a huge difference. This is much more akin to the Cunningham case than the Poets case, and in the Poets case, there was a significant downward departure, and the court felt that that had been considered in part and parcel with that downward departure. That's not the situation we have in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Both counsel, the case will be taken under advisement. We move to the final.